Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, November 14th, 2011. I'm your host, Greg Luca, and I'm here with two writers who are pumped up for another week of Florida football coverage. We have Matt Watts.
I'm old Greg.
And we have Tom Green.
What's up?
All right, so we're here fresh off our road trip to South Carolina. Was that fun, guys? You enjoyed it? Whole season of road trips wrapped up.
Yeah, Columbia was fun. I enjoyed it.
It was good times. Ran into some random people.
It was a fairly nice place. Yeah, we...
Except for that unruly man that was just really, really mean to a homeless man asking for change. That was uncalled for, a random Gamecock fan, and you should be ashamed of yourself.
Wait, what happened? I don't remember.
Outside the speakeasy?
You didn't hear about this?
No.
Some guy asked Watts for change.
Yeah, the guy comes up and he's asking for money. I said, I would help you out, but I just don't carry cash. I never carry cash on me. It's one thing I've learned living in Gainesville, that you're going to be panhandled every day, so just don't carry cash. It's an easy way to, you know, get out of it.
Right.
But free.
I would help these people out if I did carry cash, you know, disclaimer. But, you know, I tell this guy that, and there's another guy out there, you know, smoking a cigarette, and the homeless guy walks over to him. Before he can say anything, the guy starts, you know, with this profanity-laced, you know, tirade, saying, "Don't even say a word to me. Don't even say a word." Just being really, really, really rude to the guy.
That's messed up.
Yeah.
The homeless guy's got it worse than you do.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, this guy's suffering. Why can't you just say no and just let him go on his way? Why do you have to be a complete jerk about it, you know? So then this guy gets in my face, gets in the bouncer's face outside. Yeah, it was really not too good.
People these days.
He was lucky he had respect for Columbia, or else Duval might have come out.
Oh, all right. So, I mean, talking to homeless people wasn't the only thing we did in South Carolina. There was a football game that was played. We're going to talk about that on the show today.
We met a soccer coach's son.
Yeah, we did. We aren't going to talk about that, but we did.
Shout out to Stephen Kirkup.
We did run into Stephen Kirkup, the son of Florida soccer assistant coach Alan Kirkup, which is the most random thing that could happen. Like, it's not like we talked to a bunch of people and he was just one of them. Like, we learned the names of, like, what? Like, two guys? He was one of them?
I think so.
So, I mean, it was, like, the odds of that. It's a small world, as they say. But
the reason why we're talking about these things is that they're all more interesting than what took place on the field.
Right. But even so, we're going to give you 50 minutes of that stuff, too. So, fasten your seatbelts, because we do talk about some things that are definitely worth hearing.
Our breakdown is way more interesting than the actual game itself. So, make sure you stay tuned for that.
Right. If you spent 3 hours watching the game, the least you could do is spend an hour listening to us, because we're going to give you more for your buck anyway. Okay, so we're back here. We're ready to break down the exciting South Carolina game. South Carolina got the 17-12 win in Columbia over the weekend. And let's just go overall the Gators' performance. Was it about what you expected, better, worse? Just overall thoughts on what we saw on Saturday. Well, that's what you got.
I mean, it'd be hard to expect anything other than what we saw based on previous results this season. I mean, I think this team is what it is right now. They're young in a lot of areas, and they just continue to make the same exact mistakes week in and week out, and I don't think you can expect something better from a team until it shows you something better.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really know that I was going to expect that performance. I didn't expect them to win, that's for sure.
Right.
But that game was just, like, hard to watch. Like, nobody really wanted to do anything. Florida didn't want to stop the run in the first half. South Carolina didn't want
to. Sure, they wanted to.
Yeah. South Carolina didn't really want to do anything in the second half. It was just bad football.
It was. I mean, the problem we have is that it's a lot of the same things we've seen, and we don't really know, like, what does this mean? It's the same stuff in terms of. Biggest thing was they couldn't stop the run. South Carolina ran it 52 times, 215 yards. And, I mean, it was Wilds carried for 120, Connor Shaw ran for 88. What's wrong with the run defense? Why is this still a thing?
I mean, that's been the template. They that was set in October with four straight losses. Is the way to beat Florida is just run it straight down their throats. They can't stop the run. I mean, in those four losses, the opponents averaged, I think it was 46 rushes and only 22 passes, and that was even worse on Saturday against South Carolina. I mean, Sharif Floyd this morning said he doesn't feel like any offensive line that they've faced in the entire SEC is better than them on a talent level, and
he's obviously
I call shenanigans, sir, because that's just completely just, you know, it's just asinine. You can't say that. It's been proven that they are not good up front. So how can you say that you're better on a talent level?
But it just seems weird to me because, like, Jay Howard's a good player, Sharif Floyd's a good player
sometimes.
sometimes.
Dominic Easley's a, like, why? I don't get why they're not good. It doesn't make sense to me.
Loss of focus, apparently. We can't line up in the same spots. We can't get in the right positions. I mean, it's one thing after another. Every week it's something else. And they say, oh, we're this close, we're this far away. I mean, I think we just have to accept at this point that either these players either A, aren't getting the system, or B, just aren't that good.
Tom, why can't they stop the run?
Because they're facing running backs that are more talented than their defensive line.
This Wilds guy?
No, Brandon Wilds and Connor Shaw are not more talented than anybody they face.
This wasn't Lattimore.
That's, yeah, right.
Well, they just couldn't contain Connor Shaw. I mean, I think the problem was in the game planning. You heard Sharif Floyd this morning. He was saying, oh, we didn't game plan for any specific thing. We just game planned for South Carolina.
Well, I mean, I think they looked at their run game and tried to stop it, but they did say there were a few things that kind of surprised them in terms of, like, the quarterback keeping runs when there were no running backs. Like, there was a lot of times where South Carolina came out with just two tight ends and three wide receivers and ran out of that, and I guess that was something Florida wasn't prepared for. I don't know if that's... I guess that goes on the coaches, but if you haven't seen it on tape, that's something different, and they tried to adjust at halftime to no avail. Aside from the formations that were weird, like, what else is there in terms of a coaching perspective that they need to be doing differently?
I mean, it's discipline. It's staying in your gaps. They've got too many guys that are trying to be the hero and trying to make a play instead of maintaining contain on an edge, especially against a mobile quarterback like Shaw. I mean, they just continued to do it throughout the first half. And, I mean, after one series, you should be able to go to a player and say, you know, you got to maintain discipline on when you're rushing. You can't get all the way downhill when you're rushing a quarterback like Shaw. You've got to kind of sit back and play that edge.
Well, one thing I saw about South Carolina's run game was that I thought they did a really good job of hiding the ball and a lot of the read option stuff, and I thought that made a big difference. But from a Florida defensive perspective, one thing that confused me was even if it was two wide receivers and then a back and a couple tight ends, Florida was still out in their nickel package. Did you guys understand why they were doing that?
Yeah, they played zone the entire time, almost, it seemed like. And, I mean, when you're got the read option, that's going to slow you down when you're playing zone as well. I mean, I agree with you. They're playing nickel. Trey McCray's injury's got something to do with that. And I think Tyler brought up a good point after the game that I think Matt Elam is probably their third best linebacker. That's why they're playing a lot of nickel, keeping him down by the line of scrimmage.
Right, he is, but maybe in that case, because he can play, he is a safety. Maybe you need, you know, three linebackers and your Matt Elam fourth linebacker.
Well, I mean, when you've got
Kedrick Johnson and McCray out.
I don't care if you have to put Michael Taylor, Jelani Jenkins, and John Bostic out there to stop the run. You can't let them rush all over you 215 yards.
Right.
I mean, would that be the worst thing ever if they tried that? Because we don't know about anything about Kitchens or.
I think they were so scared of the pass and Alshon Jeffrey that they were. I mean, Connor Shaw even said this after the game, said that they were daring us to run, and we showed them that we could. So, I mean, I think that's what Florida came in was they were just destined to stop the pass, and they couldn't even do that the one time South Carolina attempted a deep pass. So,
right. The weird.
Last year South Carolina showed that they wanted to run all over them, like. Don't you think that after being embarrassed like that last year, you'd want to prove that they wouldn't be able to do that to you?
Right. I guess with Lattimore out, they thought it would be totally different, but you would still think that...
That falls back on the coaches, then, for not preparing them for that,
right.
For the run, then.
Especially when you lose every game the same way. Like, it's the passing game has never really been a problem in one of their losses that I can remember. The biggest one that sticks out was, you know, the Vanderbilt game where they won, you know? Yeah. Like, that's the most that they've been torched through the air.
LSU really beat them through the air, but they were going to beat them
regardless.
Right,
times, yeah.
Right.
I
mean, yeah. LSU, you know, they passed for a huge per-attempt number, but it wasn't like...
Right,
was
but they had, like, five or six just, you know, game-breaking plays in the passing game.
Right, but, okay, so you guys mentioned, you know, they wanted to take away Alshon Jeffrey and they wanted to take away the passing game, but I don't know. I'm not even so sure about that because they single covered Jeffrey most of the game, and like there was always
a safety covered. I mean, assigned to him. Also, that's why Pop Saunders got that pick in the first quarter. He made a play from deep in zone and saw the end route coming and stepped in front. So, I mean, they played man, but that's what they've done with their corners all season. I didn't expect them to change that.
I just can't see why you go against a running quarterback and a running team. And a team that, like, even coming through the weeks, Barrier was saying things like, we still have to run more than we passed. Running's still going to be the biggest part of our offense. And to let them beat you like that, I don't understand. Tom, do you know why they would approach it the way they did? Do you have any guesses? What's going through their mind?
I have no idea. I mean, like you said, they're a running team. They said they want to run more, then their opponent's focus should be on stopping the run.
Right. I don't know. I just don't get it. That's the whole reason that the defense didn't get it done, and they played well at times, but they were just out there so long. It just got worn down by the end of the game.
I think we've said that a lot this year.
Right.
You know, it's the same old story.
I mean, they tightened up in the second half. They only gave up, 50 rushing yards after halftime.
Right.
But it just wasn't enough.
They still, when the game came down to it, when it mattered, with 5.5 minutes left, they gave up that 9 consecutive runs for 2 or 3 first downs to run out the clock.
Do you think fatigue and depth are a factor in that?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, Tom, do you agree? Jay Howard said, earlier that the fact that they have guys that can rotate in, because you look at defensive tackle, they can play Howard, they can play Hunter, they can play Floyd, they can play Easley, they can play, is Okine play any tackle? And then at the end you have Green, and you have Powell, and you have Floyd, and you have Okine, and that's a solid 2 deep at all 4 positions. I don't understand how this is such a big issue. Is that not enough? What are the numbers they want? Because they say 2 deep, and you have that. How are you not getting it done? How are you still worn down at the end of these games?
These players aren't good. I don't know. That's the only explanation you can have, really.
Tom, do you have an explanation?
Maybe it falls back to Mickey Marotti and the conditioning coaches not getting them prepared well enough in the offseason.
Maybe it's like Charlie Strong said today at Louisville, they've just been playing too much Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3.
Yes. Bingo.
I mean,
they're not getting their 6 hours or 7 hours of sleep. I think that might be what it is.
There's a lot of... that was not one I'd considered. There's a lot of things that could go into it. That was not one of the ones I was thinking about. And then, on the offensive end...
And Jelani Jenkins also said something after the game. They don't have a guy that can come up and make a play and finish a game like that. Like a Brandon Spikes on defense, the last, 4 or 5 years, where a guy that can just come up and make a play and get a stop to the drive. When you've got a pivotal 3rd-and-2 situation... to be able to force a 3-and-out with still, plenty of time left on the clock, supposedly your best defensive lineman, Dominic Easley, jumps off sides. Instead of making a play, he creates a play for the other team. So I think that's the big difference with the defense.
Wasn't it Omar Hunter that said?
Yeah, Omar Hunter.
Well, Jelani Jenkins said it as well.
I think that's the biggest thing about the team in general is just that they don't have playmakers, right? The closest thing they have is Matt Elam. They don't have a guy that... When it's a clutch situation, they're going to turn to that guy, and that guy's going to make a play. They don't have it.
When TV crews are, preparing their pregame packages for Florida, they got to be like, all right, well, who are we going to put this spotlight on for the defense?
Right.
Who are we going to choose? There's not anybody that stands out.
Right.
And that guy was supposed to be Ronald Powell, and it's just not happening.
He's been the worst.
Yeah.
The worst.
He was, again, invisible. Did he play?
Supposedly, I saw his uniform. It was a little dirty, but I don't know.
If you told me he was hurt and didn't play, I'd be like, all right.
Yeah.
Sounds about right. I just don't know what to make of it. Because he's such a disappointment.
There's no other word for it. Number one overall recruit in the nation. And just, I think... Honestly, this season right now is probably the best thing that could happen for the likes of Ronald Powell, Dominic Easley, and all these other young guys that are getting significant playing time. Because, the reason they came to Florida was because Florida won 2 national championships in 3 years, and Florida was the best program, and Florida this and Florida that. So they come in with these preconceived notions that they just put on the uniform and Florida's good. I think this season right now is exactly what these guys needed. There's, plenty of reports about them coming in with big heads. They needed this to humble them and to show them that to be the best in the country, to be what Florida was those 2 to 3 years, you have to work hard. You can't just show up and pretend and automatically win because you wear orange and blue.
Well, here's the thing that I'll say about that is I think if you're going to say that, then you're implying that the talent is there.
Earlier we were kind of
saying they're
there.
Just bad.
Right, but you can't just,
You think with experience and with being humbled, these same players can be good in the future?
I feel like the players on this team haven't been humbled. They're still out there running their mouths, even though they're a 5-5 team.
Right, if somehow they are humbled and the mentality changes and they finish the year 6-7, can the same players come back next year and be good?
I mean, you can't say yes or no. I don't think that.
Well, if you think it's a talent, like William Green, I don't care how humble he is. He's
right.
Not
well,
be
he's gone. Yeah, he's gone. That's not
right,
one of the guys I'm talking
that
about.
That type of
right.
guy where you.
Right.
Like,
I mean,
you
I,
think these players
but
do have
the guys I pointed
season.
Out, Ronald Powell, Dominic Easley. You know, these guys they've shown you glimpses of being able to compete. It's just not there on a consistent level.
Tom, do you see the same kind of a thing where maybe next year these same guys are better?
When you get better players around these players, they're going to improve as well. I mean, right now, when Willie Green and players like that, and Moses Jenkins might have to play a pivotal role now with Roberson out, when Matt Patchen and Xavier Nixon are your tackles, when these type of players are on the field, it can only bring down the whole. You know, it brings down everybody else around them. When you get good players in there, it brings everybody else up.
I don't care what Muschamp said. I don't think Moses Jenkins is going to play a pivotal role in anything.
Well, not pivotal, but he might see the field, which is more than what's happened the last, you know, 10 games.
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm driving at is, can guys that are going to be back next year, can Dominic Easley, you know, John Bostic, and Matt Elam be cornerstones of a good defense?
That's a tough question. I mean, I don't think you can say definitively yes or no.
Tom?
But
I think they can be. Will they is... remains to be seen.
Just based on the flashes they've shown and the talent that they
yeah.
had coming
I think the talent's there. They just need to, you know, get it all together.
Right.
And they don't have it, everything clicking right now.
I can get on board with that. I mean, I guess there's hope for these guys. Because, I mean, over the course of the year, you've seen a lot of players, you know. What they are when they come in is not the same as what they are when they leave.
Right. And the defense, I mean, we've said this before, the defense has played actually pretty well throughout the season, and the big losses that they've had, the games that were separated by a lot of points, more of that was because the offense put the defense in terrible situations by fumbles inside their own territory, pick sixes, et cetera, et cetera. The defense is still ranked in the top 15 in the nation. I mean, they've put the offense in position to win more often than not. I mean, I think the troubles for this team have been more on the offensive side of the ball than the defensive side of the ball. So there's guys there, you know, that will make plays in the future and can be a core of a good defense, regardless of whether they're, you know, a standout playmaker or not. I think they can still do something in recruiting to get those type of guys in here, but the players that they have will only look better when they get that type of guy.
So on a team with a better offense, the same defense looks much, much better than...
Yeah, certainly, yeah. Because they're playing, you know, probably 8 to 10 minutes less per game. They're more fresh. They're not set up in terrible situations where you're fumbling and giving the other offense the ball within 20 to 30 yards of your own end zone to set up an easy score.
You're getting longer breathers on the sideline because the offense can actually stay on the field.
Right.
And you're also more coaching opportunities on the sideline when you're not in the game getting gassed by the run game the entire time.
I can definitely get on board with that. And so then with that in mind, let's talk a little bit about the offense and what they did on Saturday.
The offense did something Saturday?
Well, I mean, Chris Rainey did something Saturday. He had 132 yards.
A very quiet 132.
The run game in general, what did you guys think? Was it? I mean, I feel like the stats were almost more impressive than they were during the game and when I looked back at it.
Yeah, I mean, the stats are definitely boosted by a couple big runs. They had the one drive where Chris Rainey had the 19-yard run. Then he also had a 47-yarder late. I don't think it was like they had a consistent run game throughout the game because they couldn't hold on. They couldn't stay on the field in the first half. I think the game was more defined by their two turnovers that they had in the first half. The second play of the game, John Brantley fumbles because the offensive line can't pick up an overload on the left side. And then Jeff Demis fumbles near midfield and sets up, you know, points for South Carolina. I think that was the offensive struggles like it's been all year, is the turnovers and setting up the other team.
Right. Well, I guess one thing that we kind of talked about earlier with when we talk about some of the bad games, it's teams against which Rainey and Demis can kind of make plays just because they're faster and they're the better athletes. And I guess it was weird to see against South Carolina that same kind of thing happening. So I guess from that, I mean, do we give those guys some extra credit, Tom? Are you kind of, like, just impressed with their performance and what they're able to do? Because we know the offensive line's not good against a good defense to have this kind of performance. Is that just on them?
I mean, Rainey was kind of impressive, still on a bad ankle. You saw how bad he was limping after the game. But, I mean, the rest of their running game was doing nothing, like, at all.
Right. I mean, there was a lot of times where kind of guy just ran into the line, and I mean, Demps was bottled up pretty well, and there were a couple carries for Rainey that didn't go very far, but I guess the big plays make it all look better, but that's just the kind of players that they are. That's what you sign up for.
I think another big thing with the running game was when they had the two red zone struggles, you get down inside the opponent's 10-yard line, and you don't have a run game there to be able to punch it in the end zone. You've got to bring Jacoby Brissett, A, to play from under center so you can have to try to something in the run game. And then your offensive line struggles. You try and run side to side. Dempse loses four yards on a play. They go backwards on both those possessions. And you settle for field goals instead of touchdowns. You get touchdowns on both those drives, you win the game.
Right.
When Rainey got tackled at the two, I mean, it was, I think, a collective, you know, sigh went throughout Gator Nation. Where it's like, oh, great, here we go.
Right, it's over.
Yeah, right, now we're just going to kick a field goal.
Yeah, I joked at the time. I was like, Florida should just save itself a minute off the clock and just kick the field goal right there.
Yeah, it's not a power-running team. They don't have power-running backs. It's not a heavy power-running offensive line.
116th in the nation in scoring touchdowns and red zone opportunities.
Which tells you a lot about just
116th kind of, in the nation.
And it's so funny because the game they want to have is a power-running team, and that's just the opposite of what they are at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it looks good for all those potential recruits out there.
That's fair, too.
That's about it, you know.
There's going to be a lot of turnover at back next year.
That's why Muschamp said this morning, has this season hurt recruiting at all? No, absolutely. It's actually helped it a ton.
Right, yeah.
I still don't get why when they get down to, like, inside the five-yard line, which they did three times against South Carolina, you don't just hand it off to, like, Hunter Joyer, who's easily your biggest.
Give it to 4-1, man. Yeah. Give it to my man 4-1.
Yeah,
Just give it to him.
I got to think that's the best move, too, because, I mean, the rushing touchdown came from Brissett, and he's another bigger guy, you know.
Right, he powered through, you know, and that's what you've got to do.
Dempse and Rainey aren't doing that.
No, definitely
And especially,
not.
Like, you can't, like, it sounds so bad, but you can't afford to, like, get the snap, turn around, and give it to a back when that's your offensive line.
Yeah.
They're in there at that point. That half a second is way too long.
Running the Wildcat with Dempse or Rainey and snapping it to them directly. So
Hunter Joyer Wildcat.
Yeah, I mean, anything is better than what
Hunter Joyer under center just fall forward.
As long as it's not Trey Burton, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's bad. But I guess in terms of the passing game, at this point we kind of know what we're getting, right? I mean, Brantley is 13-21 for 119 yards. How do you look health-wise to you guys? A little bit better? Tom, what was your reaction to kind of...
His arm at first didn't look all that great. I know he said that the arm wasn't bothering at all, that the ankle's still lingering, but he short-armed a few passes early on that were very makeable throws. I know he was pressured, but it looked like, to me at least, that it affected him early on.
That hit on the second play of the game to his throwing arm certainly didn't help it, I'm sure. But, I mean... To me, after the game, like, writing stories, Brantley was kind of an afterthought. I mean, he got crushed on a lot of plays, but he wasn't a difference maker in the game. He wasn't making any plays that made you say, all right, well, Florida can go down the field and win this game with their pass. And then they get the ball back with 42 seconds left, and the only thing they can do is throw screens underneath and can't hold up for Brantley at all. I mean, it's the same thing over and over again with the passing attack. Receivers can't get separation. There's no involvement at all from the wide receivers.
Right, and then this is the next thing I'm going to say. It's a little twisted, but I think they got the performance out of Brantley that they wish they could get out of Brantley, and that would be good enough. Like, you know what I'm saying? Where he kind of just manages the game, and then because they're good in these other areas, that's fine. But, like, the way the team's structured this year, they need him to be the guy that kind of carries it and runs the show, so to speak.
Right, I mean, he's obviously not that healthy when they're still subbing Brissett in to take snaps from under center. I think Brantley probably, well, you got to give a lot of the blame to Jordan Reed for falling down, but that little out route on the play action pass on the end zone, I think Brantley could have maybe made it a better throw to Reed there, have his ankles healthy, and he's able to take a snap from under center. I also think that,
or if Jordan Reed doesn't trip over himself,
yeah, right, of course, I mean, that was just pathetic, but the running game is much better when Brantley's able to play the entire game, I think, under center and not be limited to taking snaps for just the pistol or the shotgun.
Tom, do you agree with that?
I think so. Having a healthy Brantley makes the running game better, yeah. Because you actually have a threat of a play action from under center. That would require the receivers to get some separation at times,
right,
to establish the pass. But, I mean,
you're also able to employ Hunter Joyer as a lead blocker, which they haven't been able to do out of pistol.
Well, they still kind of do that. He's just offset a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of awkward there.
I don't know.
I think it's as effective as, like, in the I formation.
I just felt like against Vanderbilt it was exactly the same as what we'd seen, and I don't see how much of a difference it would have made for, you know, like, this shotgun snap compared to the high. They're running the exact same plays. Like, what? What's the difference? I don't... Like, you can still play action out of the pistol, and they do that all the time.
Yeah, it's just a different look to the defense, you know?
I feel like it's easier to sell a play action out of the I formation than it is out of the pistol.
Maybe? Why?
I just feel like there's more movement, more time for the quarterback to sell it than as opposed to him getting the ball through.
Easier to hide the ball.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I can get with that. Maybe, and then maybe as the time goes on, maybe against Florida State, because it's not going to matter against Furman, maybe against Florida State, he can get under center and they can do some things that way. In the receiving game, the receivers are still terrible. Deontay Thompson was the only one with a catch, and he had 3 for 16 yards. Is there anything new there? They're just bad, right?
Yeah.
No comment.
There's really no reason to ask the question.
Right. Reed, 5 catches for 62 yards. Hope, we like him now. He had some good games. He's had some bad games.
I've been kind of high, not low. I won't say high, but I haven't been low on Reed the last few weeks. I think he's been the one bright spot in the passing game, if there is a bright spot.
I don't think he's been great, but by comparison, he has been.
Right. Do you think he's getting open that much better than anybody else, or does Brantley just kind of trust him?
Both.
Tom?
I think it's more like he's this big guy coming across the middle, easy to find for Brantley. I mean, he's easily bigger than any of the other receivers that they're throwing out there.
Because the only reason I bring it up is because I'm not sure, you know, maybe if they just, like, decide to target the wide receivers more, it would be reversed. Like, is Reed getting open that much better? Is it just he's a bigger body? Or is it just that Brantley's just deciding that's my guy?
I think it's a little of him deciding that's his guy, but also, you know, with his size, it's easier for him to create separation over the middle than it is for, say, a Quentin Dunbar or Frankie Hammond or Deontay Thompson.
I think they're actually targeting him more than the receiver.
Right, right. Sure. I mean, they definitely are. Like, even
no, I mean, I think like the play calls are designed for him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I mean, I'd have no problem with that. He's been the most consistent option, especially when you know he's going to be the tight end. You don't know right. who's beating playing receiver most.
And the most times he gets hit on the passes, it's not like it's Brantley's third option on the play. He's usually the first look. So.
Right. Okay. Well,
what I really want to know is what's Florida going to do next year? I mean, they don't really have any receivers coming in with their recruiting class right now, and there's nobody on this team right now that's shown that they can be a go-to receiver.
I don't have any guys in mind that I think are going to make a jump. If there's people like Quentin Dunbar who could start actually playing, and then maybe like the story guy, maybe he's ready to go. I don't know. You know, I have no idea.
Think of that Stephon Diggs character. That could be interesting.
Who?
Stephon Diggs.
Is he really really good?
He's the one that came down and lit up Friday Night Lights and et cetera, whatever. It's still just a recruit, and they're all hype talent with no backup until you actually get here and prove it on the field.
Their recruiting class right now just has like one wide receiver committed, and he's actually a better corner than he is wide receiver.
Well, I mean, I guess we'll...
Say about every wide receiver starting
right.
in Florida.
I guess the floor is that we see the same thing, though, because Reed will be here and A.C. Leonard will be here and they'll do the things they've been doing, but...
More 2 tight end sets?
I don't see it getting better, per se. Yeah, I'm with you guys on that. And again, this is something that they've talked about a lot and we're going to talk about a lot, is turnovers. And then it hasn't even been Brantley in the interceptions. It's just been fumbles. And it's like, you know, you see Brantley get sacked and it's a strip sack and that's going to happen. And then you see where Demps kind of, you know, the ball just comes out and the guy rips it away and that's a play that gets made. Why is those kind of things, which kind of seem just like innocent, could happen to anybody, you know, little mistakes happening so much more for Florida than they are forcing them to happen to other people? You know what I'm kind of asking? Like, it just seems like it's less about a talent thing or a coaching thing than just it happens or it doesn't. And it's like every game it goes the other way.
I don't know. I mean, karma? Who knows at this point? Because it's not like it just seems like they're unlucky at times to have some of those results. Brantley only has 3 interceptions on the year. It's not like he's been, you know, liability in that regard. It's been the fumbles. You're right. I don't understand it. And like Muschamp said, just got to play different guys. But how are you going to play different guys when Demps and Rainey are pretty much your only option?
I mean,
it's kind of like Florida just gets the bad bounces, like go against them every time. Like you saw on that pass where Sharif Floyd got his hands on it, somehow it went 15 yards to the other side of the field and right into a wide receiver's hands.
And, I mean, on the fumbles, I guess there's such a thing as being a fumble-prone player, but for it to happen this much and the defense doesn't force them the other way, I mean, you can see when they're trying to rip the ball out sometimes, you know? Like, it just seems odd that it only works one way.
Yeah, I don't know why the defense can't force turnovers. I think that's the big thing for me. I mean, they're -10 in margin, but they've only forced, 9 on the season? That's ridiculous. That's not the Florida defense, and that's not Muschamp. I mean, that's not a Muschamp-led defense. But he said the other day, you know, I haven't been trying to coach turnovers any differently than the year Texas led the nation in turnovers. It's got to be the personnel. You know, it's not plays. It's not coaching. It's got to be players at some point. You know.
I mean, I guess. And then in terms of forcing them, we saw Pop Saunders make a play where he was in deep zone coverage, and he came charging up and he made the diving pick. And I mean, that was just an awesome play. What did you guys make of his performance overall, though, and kind of what we've seen of him this season? Is he, because, you know, Josh Evans, we definitely don't like. And then there's, although he did have a solid game, he had 11 tackles, I think. But just in terms of Pop Saunders, is he kind of the guy at safety next to Matt Elam going forward?
I think this was probably one of his better games of the year. I mean, a lot of the times where Florida secondary has been beat, we've looked over and it's been Pop Saunders that's, you know, supposed to be 10 yards closer to the receiver, but, you know, just blew the coverage. So I think, although South Carolina didn't really throw often.
Yeah, they threw 13 times. Right,
hard to judge.
Yeah.
But it was still one of his better games. Like, that play that he made on that interception was a good read on him, a good jump, and just great athleticism to be able to dive and snag it.
Yeah, and I mean, so I guess just overall, are we coming away with anything from this game that we didn't know coming in? Like, what's...
No.
No.
Yeah, I mean, fascinating season at Florida continues.
I mean, we know that Marcus Robertson's out for the rest of the year.
I mean, yeah, we learned that this morning. That's an interesting tidbit. I don't know. I mean, against Furman, it's not going to matter, and against Florida State, they're going to lose anyway, but I don't know. It's just in terms of what we see on the field, it's like it's the same thing every week. And I guess fascinating season at Florida continues. That's all it really is.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be discouraging for these guys. Especially it really has to be. Season.
I mean, do you guys think that they're still into it? Is there any sense of give up that we think at this point?
I mean, we don't play football. We're not in that mindset, that environment. I mean, yeah. I kind of liken it to like an army or military style, you know, or your regiment, where that's like you're drilled to want to do that every single day. And I think they're motivated more by their, you know, future success possibility than you know, the next game, or discouraged by having a losing season.
Is the Furman game matter to them for bowl reasons? Are they thinking about that? Is that a motivation at this point?
I think they're gonna like look at Furman as a stress ball or a pinata or, you know, something, right, to go out there and release some tension on, to just, you know, show that they can play decent football.
Yeah, John Brantley's going to go out, throw for like 350 yards. Quentin Dunbar's going to have like a 100-yard game out of nowhere.
And then Rainey and Dempsey are going to go crazy, of course, right? But
Rainey might actually even catch a pass.
Yeah, I mean, it's just depressing at this point, you know? Like, we're going to grind through the last couple weeks, but we know what's going on with the team, and there's not much that's going to change just because they don't have other players behind them that are going to kind of rotate up and start taking spots and make this a shakeup. It's just what it is at this point, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, we've been writing the same thing for the last 5-6 weeks now.
Right. It is what it is basically the moral of the story. All right, so now that we have talking about these depressing Gators out of the way, we'll talk about some guys who are actually pretty successful. We have the Gators in the NFL. Natural starting point, as always, Tim Tebow.
Woohoo!
2 of 8, 69 yards and a touchdown. 2 of 8. He threw the ball 8 times.
That was impressive.
He didn't have a completion until the third quarter.
And it was like, because he didn't have a completion in the last quarter and a half of the last game they played, he had to actually go on like a full 60 minutes without completing a pass.
I'll tell you what, man. All that boy do is win.
Yeah, I mean, well, they did win the game. You get some credit for that, right? Like, I know it's kind of become like a wrong cliche to say, like, as long as he wins it doesn't matter, but to some point it's got to be true, right? Like,
I mean, they were running the read option. I mean, that's just silly,
but it worked.
I know. It's just unbelievable.
That worked in the NFL.
He had 9 carries for 43 yards and a touchdown.
It worked against Kansas City.
It worked against Oakland too,
Right. Like, I mean, if they can...
Right. Those aren't two good defenses.
So, against... I mean, against good teams, you're just not going to get it done. Is that...
We'll find out this Sunday when they play the Jets. I mean, the Jets
are... Thursday. We don't even have to wait.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Thursday. Woohoo.
Special edition Gators in the NFL on Friday, maybe.
Yeah.
we'll see what happens. But,
He did throw a perfect deep ball to Eric Decker, though. And he's always been able to throw a great deep ball with touch. That's one thing that he does better than a lot of NFL quarterbacks, actually.
It's like early in the year when we were talking about, like, Florida here and John Brantley. It's like, if they don't have to throw the ball, you don't throw the ball. And you can't necessarily judge him because he's not throwing the ball, you know? So the Tebow thing continues to be a work in progress, and we'll see what happens with that. Elsewhere, Aaron Hernandez had 4 catches for 41 yards. Brandon Spikes didn't play. Aaron Hernandez continues to be really, really good. Jabal Gaffried, is that his name?
Jabar Gaffney.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's wow. Him.
You don't remember when Sean Merriman called him that?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Anyway, 3 catches for 37 yards. I mean, that's a Jabar Gaffney day.
What about Rex Grossman?
Rex Grossman's terrible. I mean...
Homer.
He played pretty well. He played pretty well at times, and then he just does what Rex Grossman does and makes just the crippling mistakes. There's a red zone interception that was particularly awful and stands out to me, so...
Overthrew another one that landed right in Vontae Davis's hands.
How the Dolphins managed to get the W. Woo! But yeah, I mean, Rex Grossman's bad. That's not really breaking news. Major Wright had himself a pick six, right? What else did he do in that game? Does either one of you have that?
Yeah, I got him right here. He had 3 tackles. 2 of them were solo. He also had 2 passes defended.
So he's solid.
Jeremy Mincy.
Just going to say, if we don't talk about Jeremy Mincy, Watts is going to lose his mind.
Jeremy Mincy was the force for the Jaguars against the Colts yesterday. He had 5 tackles, 2.5 sacks, a tackle for loss, and a forced fumble at the end of the game on a sack that Tyson Alualu caught in the air, and that sealed the game. Jaguars scored a touchdown.
Without Jeremy Mincy, the Jaguars lose to the Colts.
I think he's the Gator in the NFL of the day, right?
I think so, definitely.
Who's the other candidates? Who else we got? Anybody on Cincinnati do something?
No, Cincinnati. Carlos Dunlap did not register a stat. That guy who pretends to play safety called Reggie Nelson, he had 2 tackles. Uh-oh. How about it? And Andre Caldwell, did Andre Caldwell like day of 3 catches for 25 yards?
Yeah, I mean, you'll say something for the Gators in the NFL. They're consistent.
Joe Hayden for the Browns, 4 tackles, 3 passes defended. That's about it.
Here's the thing I want to say about Joe Hayden. I was reading something on ESPN.com last week from Matt Williamson, who's one of their Scouts Inc. guys who used to work for the Browns. And he said that, you know, Joe Hayden right now is the second best corner in the league behind Darrell Revis, which would put him, like, ahead of Namdi.
I mean...
And Namdi's been bad, and I haven't watched enough Browns football to make this kind of assessment. Well, but if somebody
the Browns
have
the number one
impressive
pass defense in the NFL, or they did coming into this week. I'm not sure if that's still accurate, but they had the number one pass defense coming into the NFL, and they don't have that without Joe Hayden.
So, I mean, given these things, I think I might have to re-rank our top 10 Gators in the NFL. I would probably move Joe Hayden up to number one.
Right, like, the way you guys had that ranked, I mean, that was just kind of had to be on a whim or, like...
You were here, and you said it was okay,
no,
aside from Reggie Nelson.
No, I was completely against pretty much all of it.
That's not true at all.
He hated the entire thing.
We all agreed on
the whole premise.
We all agreed on the top 3.
I don't know about that.
We didn't agree on the order of the top 3, but
we all
agreed
on who the top 3. It's Hernandez and it's Pouncey and it's Hayden. That's easily the top 3. Not in that order, but that's easily the top 3 guys. Then Harvin's the natural next one. And then I thought it came together pretty fairly.
I think it's Mincy number one, honestly.
Right, yeah. See, it's the Jags homer in him that's really going to clog this whole thing up. But, yeah, Gators in the NFL, another solid week all around, so.
Whee!
Yay on them. All right, before we get to the weekly awards, I want to read a couple emails this week. We have one from Marshall Spivak, our old friend there. He says, the Gators look lethargic in their offensive approach. I don't know how many times I yelled, what are you doing when we were on offense? They did one reverse and one end around that got a few yards, but not enough. No Gillislee again. Not sure if Brantley was hurt, but he looked gimpy, hesitant, and sloppy. Not enough fire in him to win a road game. So, I mean, anything there that stands out to you in terms of we talked about a little bit. I don't remember if it was you guys or if it was Tyler and Cody, but on one of the shows about kind of more trick plays and things like the reverses and the end arounds where because they're a fast team, they get the defense going one way and then they switch it back. And we have not seen a lot of that. Is that surprising to you guys at all?
No.
Tom, is that you don't think that's something that they should be incorporating more that could work for them, that it's weird that there just hasn't been any of it.
They do a lot of side-to-side stuff, and not a lot of it works. I don't see why you would try some more.
And the only trick plays we've really seen this season were they've run, what, like four flea flickers, and
they're big
two of them
that
have work.
Yeah. And then, I mean, Gillisley, anything on that? Why? Because, I mean, we think it's just pass protection at this point, right?
It's got to be.
Yeah.
That's the only thing.
Yeah.
And then I guess this was something we talked about a little bit. Do we even see him having a role next year? Because, you know, they're going to bring in a guy. Who's the recruit?
They're bringing like three
Matt
guys.
Jones and Mike Davis.
And then they have Mac Brown still kind of around. So, I mean, there may never be a time where Gillisley is a big guy in this offense.
I don't think so. Apparently not. I just don't understand what the perception is inside the program. I'd like to know. But, I mean, Gillisley has had some issues with fumbling, and that's one of the last things they need right now.
I feel like maybe we would have seen him more if John Brantley never got hurt. But because Brantley's still gimpy, they don't want to have Gillisley as a bigger risk in pass protection, maybe?
I mean, it's a chance. Maybe if they have a more mobile quarterback, they can do stuff with that. And I know, because I think that just the fact that they choose to use him in the Burton stuff, which we didn't see any of this week, but the fact that they choose to use him in the Burton stuff is a sign that they think he's one of the better runners, if it's as simple as give it to him and let him go. Marshall writes, on the defense, why was Shaw able to run the sweep over and over again? Tyler's calling me in the middle of the show. I'm trying to read an email, and Tyler's calling me in the middle of the show. Anyway, on the defense, why was Shaw able to run the sweep over and over again the same side? The linebackers are not getting to the gap and are waiting for the runner to get to them. Not good. And this is something we've talked about a little bit. Did you see kind of the same thing where, you know, they sit back and let the play come to them rather than being attacking guys in terms of Bostic and Jenkins?
Yeah, definitely. They hesitate a lot. I mean, a lot of that was because of the zone coverages they were playing for a lot of the game. But still, I mean, that's definitely an issue with the team.
What's the answer? Is Michael Taylor better at that than them from what you guys have seen? That was something we talked about.
Yeah.
But in his start, I didn't think it was that much different.
I mean, he is better. And as a freshman, he's showing more signs of that than they do right now.
Tom, do you have a take on the linebackers?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's rough out there. All right, and then Marshall goes on about the uniforms and stuff again, but we're not going to get into that.
Sorry, Marshall.
And then other email we have is from Josh Rose. He says, I'm not the type to call for the firing of coaches so quickly, but the constant lack of fundamentals, parentheses, protecting the ball, wrapping up in tackles, the false starts, etc., has been so consistent all season that it's rather outstanding. And now I think he's a smart guy. He understands that it's not Muschamp, but he says, is there any assistant coach, in your opinions, that should be fearful for his job at this point? Hill, Verducci, White, Robinson. This is not something that we've talked about when we talk about kind of the coaching shakeup and what we make of the struggles. But it's an interesting notion. I mean, where do you guys stand on that? Is there a chance we see some assistant changes?
I mean, Aubrey Hill, I doubt it. He's more of a recruiter than he is a position coach, which is the case with some of these coaches. You put your worst coaches at, like, running back coach and wide receivers coach just because they're better recruiters and you just need them somewhere. That's why you've seen Brian White move around from position to position while he's been here. But, I don't know about any shakeups yet.
So you don't think, you know, bad position coaches is an effect on any of the problems we're seeing?
I'm not sure we can give Muschamp a free pass on all of that.
Well, I mean, no, definitely not, but, like, the idea that you're going to fire Muschamp is asinine.
No, of course.
So that's why, I mean, you have to ask. If you're going to ask, it's at the next level. You don't see that either?
I don't think so. I mean, the only guy might be Brian White, but he's been around the program for so long, I don't think that's a possibility. But he's been a part of relaying the plays in from upstairs and not being able to see what's going on upstairs. That's why they moved Weiss up for that one game. They said they weren't getting good information from upstairs. And then when he was downstairs on the field, they said they couldn't get the plays in fast enough. So obviously there's probably a disconnect there between Weiss and White, so that might be something to look at.
Right, and then another question from Josh is, to be honest, I'm not sure if this question is serious or a joke, but for the love of God, why is Xavier Nixon still on the team?
We'd like to know that too.
There's just nobody else. Chaz Green is injured. There's just nobody else that can play tackle.
And that's,
and
I mean,
be it.
I don't think we're stressing this enough. There is literally nobody else. Like, because Chaz Green is out. He was injured. He couldn't play. And then you have Patrick and you have Nixon, and who is the fourth guy?
There isn't one.
So,
I mean, they still have Kyle Coney technically listed at tackle.
Right, but he's, you know, purely guard.
But yeah, he's been playing guard.
So is there, I mean, you guys have followed the recruiting stuff a lot more closely than I have. Is there a guy who's coming in?
They got a couple of recruits coming in. Jessamyn Dunker is a big offensive lineman, 6'6", 315 right now.
DJ Humphreys, is he playing tackle?
Yeah, DJ Humphreys is a tackle. He's 6'5", 265 right now, so... He's probably your future at tackle.
Right. So I'm, there's hope for the future, program. At least.
Ryan Muschamp said this morning he's not afraid to play a freshman, so.
Right. And yeah, rightfully so, given the play of the line so far. All right. Well, I guess that wraps up the emails for this week. You want to get into that party, podcast@alligator.org. Hit us up there. So move into the awards. We have the Ahmad Black Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and the Will Hill Awful Life Decisions of the Week. Start with the Ahmads. Matt Watts, what do you have for us? If this is about golf, I swear to God.
John Daly.
Moving on.
This is seriously like a joke, dude. Go.
I gotta give John Daly an Ahmad for keeping John Daly alive.
You have 5 seconds.
He kind of curtailed his wild behavior the last few years, but in a tournament in Australia this weekend, he was 4 over through 9 holes. Then he played the wrong ball out of a bunker on hole 10, and the cameraman saw him and didn't tell him it was the wrong ball. So he got really upset at that, and then he hit 7 balls into the water on purpose on the next hole and walked off the course and quit.
Wait, how's that in a mod?
Because it's great.
It's entertaining.
It's awesome. It's John Daly. It's John Daly being John Daly. Yeah, and he hadn't been that way in a while. He's been kind of nice. But this is the guy that, you know, routinely smokes cigarettes on tour when it's against the, you know, rules and gets fined for that and does whatever he wants. He's my hero. I love John Daly.
That took about 40 seconds too long. Tom, what's your mind?
Mine goes to Mark Hollis.
Who?
The athletic director of Michigan State. The man who made the aircraft carrier classic possible.
There you go. That was awesome.
I mean, I didn't care so much about the game itself, but just like the atmosphere and the pictures that came from it were awesome. Yeah, the idea itself is amazing.
They played a basketball game on a boat outside. It was on Veterans Day. It was perfect. It was a great event. I hope they do it again.
Just the pictures that came from it were some like the most captivating sports photos you'll see.
For sure. All right, my Ahmad's going to Reggie Bush. He's awesome. When they traded for Reggie Bush, everybody was like, Reggie Bush is a bum, and Reggie Bush, you know, he's soft, and they thought he was Chris Rainey and Jeff Demps, and he's not a power runner, but he finishes plays, and he, like, tries to, he's not afraid of contact as much as a lot of these other guys are.
They're finally employing him in the right way, and right. I'm happy for him. He had a good game yesterday.
They're getting him the ball in a variety of ways. He had 2 touchdowns, so yay for Chris Rainey. Yay for Reggie Bush. Yay for Reggie Bush. Okay, so we're going to move over to the Wills. Matt Watts, what you got?
In honor of the name of the award, Bad Angle of the Week, I've got to go ahead and give it to Josh Evans on Connor Shaw's first touchdown run. The angle he took on that was absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, and he's no stranger to bad angles.
Right, it was just his MO, so it was very, very satisfying. Well, satisfying for some and hilarious for others and you know, disappointing for a lot of the people listening to this podcast.
And fun for us to talk about.
Yeah, that's a throwback award, man. Back when it used to be the bad angle of the week.
Yeah.
That was just a
someday it will be again. But Tom, what do you have for us?
I'm giving it to the NBA. I don't even care who to blame anymore. David Stern, Billy Hunter, you name it. I just want my NBA back.
Yeah, you're not getting it.
Now the season's in jeopardy.
Lawyers are involved. You know what that means.
I think a lot of people kind of knew the NBA wasn't happening, but I'm sorry you got your hopes up for nothing.
I'm sad.
All right. And mine's going to go to us in part, mostly the whole media in general for this Florida football team, because I think there's not a lot of different things going on, and there's not a lot of, you know, fire, and the questions are pretty, like, blah, and they, like, the players don't want to talk about any of this stuff anymore, and the coaches have lost a lot of interest, and I think the whole coverage is just going downhill at this point. I don't want to spoil. Like, keep reading for sure, because we're trying real hard, but it's just rough out there, man.
Yeah, can we rally on basketball?
You guys know what I'm saying, right?
I mean, it's really hard to come up with a fresh spin on the story you wrote 5 weeks ago.
Right.
And the same week after that, and the week after that, and the week after that.
It's like, just change the team name, change the score.
Right. So, I mean.
Right, like, I told you guys, I really just wanted to ask Jelani Jenkins, do you guys talk about just playing how bad you are, like,
right? And just like, in the interest of honesty, I'm not gonna hide it from you guys, we're struggling. And no, it's not just us either. If you want coverage, you come to us, because we still got some heart, and we tell it like
right.
It is,
we've got the better of the worst coverage right
as a whole. Here's what my hope was. I think we have to get through this week, because when we get towards the very end of the season, you start looking ahead to next year, and you start talking about, you know, seniors who are graduating and their future. But there's going to be like a 4 or 5 day window here where just nothing happens. So, warning.
Maybe they'll bring up some random senior this week that's going to play against Furman that, like, never plays.
Right. There's
so we have something new.
I guess this. So then part of the Ahmad goes to those people, too. Dan Apple. I'm calling you out.
Damn.
But,
you mean the Will Hill?
Yeah.
You said Ahmad.
Oh, my bad. Yeah. Dan Apple gets part of the Will Hill. And I think Dan Apple gets a bad rap, honestly. Like, I think he's doing what he can with the way the system works. But, you know, it's just a bummer. Anyway.
Can we give another Will Hill to ESPN for choosing to broadcast Florida State's game next Saturday at 7 p.m.?
Yeah, what's up with that? Nobody's going to, like, yeah. I don't know. It doesn't scream primetime matchup this year.
No. Certainly doesn't.
And it does not make our lives any easier with deadlines, but...
No.
And can we give one to Greg for being a... If he were a head coach, being a coach that would coach to not lose?
No. Nope.
We're not getting into this discussion.
Yeah, we had a big debate on how Florida used their timeouts and whether it was right or wrong, but we won't get into that here, so... That about wraps up the show for this week. Again, send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org. You can find us on Twitter @AlligatorSports. You can find me @GregLuca. You can find Matt Watts...
@WattMats, WATTMATTS.
You can find Tom.
@TOMAS_VERDE.
And then subscribe on iTunes. Find us on Facebook.com/AlligatorPodcast. Same old with that stuff. We will be back. I want to get a basketball show somehow. I got to figure this out. It's a busy week for everybody, but we got to see what we can do there. Worst case scenario, we'll talk about it on Thursday, which is when we're going to be doing the shows now, at the emailer's requests. So, Thursday show will be Tyler and probably Cody, and maybe we get Booth in there and we talk a little basketball. So, yeah, if you've given up on football as we have, just you can keep coming back for your basketball stuff for sure. So
yeah, pick up the paper also. There was a great feature on Patrick Young in Thursday's edition last week. And
you
we'll
can
have
find
another,
that online.
Yeah, find it online. We'll have another feature this Friday.
On Jay Howard.
Yep.
From yours truly. So, yeah. All right. Well, I guess keep an eye out for all that. We will see you on Thursday. And until then, thanks for listening.